We welcome you into the show. I know myself and Alex both pretty excited coming into today. We've had a lot more positive feedback on our content last week. Want to say thank you to you guys for that on that front. Keep chiming in on what you think about things. And, man, we're just so happy to be here.
I'm excited to be here once again, week two of college football. Week one didn't go well for me as a Bama fan, but I'm still living. I'm here. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's safe to say for our audience that neither one of us guys are all or nothing with football. Yeah, we're upset. Yeah, we're disappointed if it doesn't go on our way. But at the end of the day, it's just a sport, and there's a lot more to this life than what we watch on TV. However, we'll get to that game momentarily. How about Auburn? We'll start things off with the victorious Tigers. They get the job done over Baylor, two scores, which is basically what I said on our podcast last week. And maybe not offensively, Alex, the way I would have envisioned it to have been done, but it was really good to see Auburn getting back to the roots of running the football.
That's the best thing I saw from Auburn is they saw the run was working and they didn't go away from it. Hugh Freeze didn't say, okay, the run's working. Let me start trying to run some RPO, throwing the ball down the field and forcing stuff that's not there. He realized that Baylor could not stop Jackson Arnold on the QB run, couldn't stop Damari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb in the backfield, and said, okay, let's just run it down your throats, and he never stopped.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really a good performance. Not so much on the defensive side. We'll talk more about that at a later time. But this week, Auburn will play Ball State. Ball State coming off with 31-0, trouncing off the hands of Purdue. The Boilermakers really got them good. Auburn can gain more confidence before league play if they tack on another W. Jackson Arnold did look like a capable quarterback. We just talked about him a little bit. Third quarterback to rush for 130 and two touchdowns in a debut since guy named Nick Marshall, and before that a guy named Cam Newton. So I think that's pretty good company.
Yeah, it was outstanding to see his ability to run the football. Unfortunately, I got to see that last year in his game against Alabama when he was on Oklahoma. It's mind-boggling to me that Dave Aranda didn't game plan for Jackson Arnold's feet or make any adjustments in the game, but he made that mistake, and Hugh Freeze and Jackson Arnold made him pay for it.
Yeah, and I think Auburn fans, I've seen, they might be yearning for a few more downfield passing plays, but seeing how well they moved Baylor around up front, for me, I think you'll expect to see a lot more of Jackson Arnold, Damari Alston, and Jeremiah Cobb. You talked about him, definitely one of his best games at Auburn rushing the ball. Also, Darrell Robinson, the transfer from UConn, got a few carries in some power situations. I think you can expect to see a little more of that with a lesser opponent this week. Hugh Freeze is liable to probably go a little deeper into his bench a little sooner should the Tigers take care and execute of the game plan. I'd expect Auburn to get in rhythm early. Plenty of things to improve on the defensive side. I think they'll get a confident defensive unit, maybe a 45-10 type game to go 2-0.
What I want to see from Auburn this week is get Jackson Arnold comfortable in the passing game. We know he's comfortable using the QB run, running the read option, throwing the short passes, but can you get the passing game going? Because these next two games with Ball State and South Alabama, you have to get his passing confidence up, because when you go to that next week, you're going to get tested.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a really good thing to point out. Auburn does have a pretty rough three-game stretch there with Texas A&M, and then we get a bye before Georgia. But after Texas A&M, it's – remind me.
We have Oklahoma after South Alabama.
So it's Oklahoma, A&M, and then Georgia. Yeah, I was forgetting Oklahoma. Yeah, Oklahoma, we'll talk more about them later in the show, but they're a team to kind of keep one eye on. They do have a really tough schedule, but I like Auburn to take it against Ball State at least for now, going to 2-0. We mentioned your Crimson Tide earlier, and
don't want to talk about it, but we have to.
Yeah, well, we won't talk about it the whole lot. I'm not a fan that likes to rub salt in the wound. And just to be honest with you, the main thing for me was the effort that kind of really concerned me, in particular on the defensive side. I did think Jeremy Bernard played an outstanding game. I think the defense came in prepared. The Noles did for Ryan Williams. Really wasn't a whole lot there, even before his injury. But, Alex, you got to like what you saw with Bernard, the connection from Simpson. When the pocket had time, I didn't think Ty looked too bad. I know that one stat came about on 247, how he held the ball for the longest time. Yeah, you want to correct that a little bit, but man, he was the only reason the fourth down play at the end was even as close as it was, because he's not as fast maybe as Jackson Arnold, but he has a lot of elusiveness and pocket awareness, and he almost extended the game for the Tide. I thought his effort was good. I thought the defense really let the Tide down.
I'm not a fan that likes to criticize players' effort, because I know the work that goes in during practice in the off season and the early mornings, the late nights. But it's hard for me to sit in this room and during this podcast not criticize what I saw on the football field last weekend. Bray Hubbard, the clip's already gone viral of him jogging across the field when the receiver's down the sideline scoring a touchdown and he's given about 50%. It was mind-boggling to me. If Nick Saban would have seen that and he was on the sideline.
Are the players laughing on the last drive when it was clock at time on the defensive line, just chuckling? Yeah.
And then you have a guy in Justin Jefferson who I think of the world of. I think he's super talented at linebacker, getting de-cleated by a Florida State tight end. I don't think I've ever seen in my lifetime a linebacker of Alabama get de-cleated by the opposing team's tight end. Usually it's the other way around. Reuben Foster has done that numerous times in his career. Reggie Ragland, Sean Dion Hamilton.
You can go back before that with Courtney Upshaw.
Rolando McClain.
Yes, absolutely.
The effort just was not there from that team. And considering the time you had to prepare for the game, I'm in utter disbelief of the coaching job that was done being so poor and the effort the players put out there. I talked about the keys to the game last week for Bama to win it. Contain the scrambling of Thomas Castellanos. He led the team in rushing yards, 16 carries, 78 yards, and a touchdown. Yeah. So lost that key. Remain disciplined. If you watch the game, you know they weren't disciplined at all. Linebackers were jittery as soon as the ball was snapped, even after it was, not reading the right lanes.
Offensive line.
Overcommitting. Yeah. Defensive line, minimal pressure. There was a couple of drives in that third quarter and that fourth quarter where they made a good push. But outside of those couple of drives, it was pretty abysmal getting pressure on the quarterback and containing him and having rush integrity. And then the last thing I said was avoid getting beat down the field by the speedy receiver being Squirrel White. And in the first drive of the game, he caught a pass on third and long that put him in the red zone, and they ended up scoring. And when I saw that, I was just having Vietnam flashbacks to this podcast last week and just what I talked about. And I'm like, do I know more than the coaching staff at Alabama? I don't claim to be smarter than coaches. I never will. But I was just sitting there like, if someone that does a podcast in a small town in Alabama. Sound like
some of the same questions me and Dad used to ask about Gus. If we could sit here from the couch and call, you know the defense, man.
It blows my mind that I'm able to sit here, because I'll be the first to admit I'm not some football expert, never will be. I'm just a casual fan like people listening to this podcast. I have a little bit of knowledge of football in general. And to see what I saw, I came unglued. I wanted to get on that sideline and rip the guys a new one. And the coaching staff, you watch the game, Kalen DeBoer sitting there for 95% of the game with the same squinted eyes, stupid look on his face of what's going on. There's no emotion from him, Kane Womack. Ryan Grubb's up in the booth, so you really can't see emotion from him. The players came out flat. I know you scored on the opening drive, but there wasn't that same Alabama on the field. And
no, it's not a killer instinct.
There never will be with Nick Saban gone, but there was no oomph from the team. It just felt like they were out there and just they were there. They existed on the field with Florida State. And Florida State came out there with the killer instinct. I've got something to prove. We were 2-10 last year. Everybody's saying this is a shoe-in win for Alabama. Well, guess what? We're not a slouch this year. We got two new coordinators, a new quarterback, and we have some weapons. And they just stuck it to Bama, and Bama didn't know how to respond. And Kane Womack, again, it was like the Vanderbilt game last year. Couldn't stop the run, couldn't stop the RPO, the read options, the downfield passes. And while that falls on Kane Womack himself because he didn't prepare the team well enough, the players didn't execute either.
Yeah.
So it doesn't all – fans don't need to be blaming – the coaching staff by themselves, because who knows, maybe they did prepare them, but the players didn't give the effort they needed to do for Bama to win a football game. And it falls on both of them. They have to look themselves in the mirror and figure out what to do to turn the page in this book, because you can't look at this game and look at the way you lost and go, well, season's over, we're 0-1. You still got a whole season left to play. It's easy. You can be sitting here at the end of the year and be 11-1 and making the college football playoff. But it's easy to be here at the end of the year and be 5-7, not making a bowl game. It becomes the mentality of the coaching staff and the roster to say, this is not the end of the season. This is just one game. We have to turn it around and make that change.
Yeah, we have to turn it around and the oomph. You kind of are going off of what I was going to say next in a killer instinct dog mentality. Basketball terms, I couldn't stand Kobe Bryant when he played because of some of that arrogance. But at the same token, it was that very arrogance that held his teammates to the highest standard. And if you don't have a guy like that on your staff or on the team, someone's got to weather the troops, and there's nobody there to lift the weapon at that point. And to your point, in years past, even as an Auburn fan, you know, like I can remember situations of seeing Coach Saban up huge games, a huge like leads in game situations, and the margin for error would still be very, very thin. Now, he would yell and scream just the same as he would up 28. And some, the casual, less than casual fans say, why? And the reason for that is to fire up the team and to hold them to the highest standard. Somebody's got to be there to do that. And I'm not saying that Coach DeBoer doesn't have standards, and I'm not saying that you'll ever be able to replace Nick Saban, because I don't think you will. However, if I was Tide fans, I'd be a little concerned right now about the habits that are starting. Yes, it ends with the players. They can always execute. But the habits that you carry into a game are a result from what's allowed at practice, right? It's like what you allow will continue. So it's kind of on the players and the coaches. It's a collective effort, like you said. And I think with Alabama having that game under their belt, you know, it was kind of an eye-opener right off the bat. And sometimes that works the best for teams, Alex, to kind of turn the tide in the season, is to get the worst out of the way. We know what is going to happen if we don't execute. We can't do that again. Got Louisiana Monroe playing a very ticked-off Alabama defense. I think the Tide bounced back to, you know, those ways of taking care of lesser opponents and getting the job done here for some confidence.
I hope for Kalen DeBoer's sake and the coaching staff's sake, and really even the players' sake, that they turn it around this week, because if we see a Bama team that comes out flat like they did last week and they just kind of skate by UL Monroe, heads will roll. If it's not this week, it'll be next week. You cannot come out against a team you're supposed to beat and play the way that Alabama has played against those teams the past couple of years. You go to USF, the rainy game when Ty Simpson had to come in and bail them out. I know it's not under Kalen DeBoer, but that was rough. Last year against USF, I know the score was pretty – the margin was pretty large, but a lot of that game was pretty close to going up into the third and fourth quarter, and then Alabama separated themselves from the pack and had a Byron Brown, who we're going to talk about later with USF, hit a couple downfield shots. Alabama could have easily gone into halftime down to USF at home last year. But this is a game you have to figure out what was wrong with your team, come out hungry. And while we'll learn a lot about how this team responds to all the criticism and all the efforts the coaching staff has made and the players have made in this week of practice and preparation, the biggest indicator to me is going to be the game against Wisconsin the following week, because that's the tough opponent. UL Monroe is going to be tough, but the big test is going to be Wisconsin, because that's the game before Georgia. Does the team come out there after, if they do beat UL Monroe, do they come out there complacent and saying, okay, well, we just thumped UL Monroe, we're doing the same thing in practice this week, we're going to come out there and do the same thing to Wisconsin? Or do they have that same killer mentality of, we still have something to prove, people are doubting us, saying Nick Saban's gone, we don't have anybody to save us, this Bama team is not what it used to be, Bama's going to take a downward spiral, Kalen DeBoer is not the guy. Can you respond to that and continue the killer instinct and the preparation you did in UL Monroe week and beat Wisconsin and continue to hit those wins over and over again against the schedule?
Yeah, I think that's right on point. I think you could see a tactic that the coaching staff could take a page out of, Clemson's playbook whenever they went back and played Alabama the next year and beat them. And they all took pictures of the scoreboard. What Tommy Castellanos did was talk his talk and then back it up. Here's what the guy said about you. Here's what you did to prove him right. There's very little as a competitor that's going to fire you up more than seeing something like that. Like, this guy was talking and I proved him right. I don't want to prove him right again. I want to prove my university right. I want to prove my coaching staff right. I think you're exactly right there. I think Alabama will definitely take a step upward this week. How about another exciting game on the horizon? Michigan and Oklahoma. This is one that I think could very sneakily be a really good contest. You have two teams, each with a new quarterback, the very talented freshman from Michigan, Bryce Underwood. I mean, he as advertised, Alex?
He looked pretty good. And I know it was against a subpar opponent in New Mexico, but he looked the part. He was prepared. He slung the ball around the field, limited himself with mistakes, and he was the part.
And so was John Mateer. Man, a really good performance. Only threw, like, what, three or four incompletions? And
seven total, 30 of 37. That's good for 37 passing attempts.
Yeah, I mean, that's over 65%, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's really efficient. And a blowout win for the Sooners. They do have, I think, maybe just as many weapons as Michigan. I think Michigan's pretty good in that category, especially when you talk about getting the ball in the open field to their running backs to let them make plays. But this is a game that in Oklahoma, I think the defense probably for the Sooners is the difference. I think they have a little too much on that side of the ball, and I think Oklahoma wins a close one.
Like we just talked about, Bryce Underwood played stellar against New Mexico, but the guy that stood out to everybody in the college football world was the Bama transfer at running back, Justice Haynes. He finished with 16 carries, 159 yards, and three touchdowns. And anybody that's watched Michigan, either under Jim Harbaugh or Shamar Moore, he's going to run the football. He's going to run it down your throat until you're tired of it. He's not going to lean on the quarterback 95% of the time like other coaches do, like Kalen DeBoer did with Ty Simpson against Florida State. He's going to run it until you're tired of seeing him run the football. And if he's having success, Bryce Underwood might throw 10 passes in this football game. Oklahoma, their run attack against Illinois State was putrid. And I understand they were playing two freshmen. They were down two starters. But you have your best running back in Jaden Ott finish with one carry for negative 3 yards. And then your other running back, Javonte Barnes, 7 carries for 9 yards.
And Jaden Ott was one of the more underrated transfer portal pickups. And to think you give him one carry is pretty astounding.
Yeah. So for the key for Michigan is going to be to establish the running game, control that time of possession in a hostile environment, shrink the pocket on John Mateer. Because if you watched Washington State last year, where Mateer was at, when teams shrank the pocket on him and they did not lose contain, that's going to be the big thing, is shrink the pocket, but don't lose contain, because if you lose contain, he's going to run. He's a scrambling quarterback. So shrink that pocket on him, make him make a bad decision, throw over the middle and into that defense, and don't lose that contain. Then for Oklahoma, disguise your defensive coverages to confuse Bryce Underwood, because Bryce Underwood, while he played great last week, played New Mexico. New Mexico is not Oklahoma's defense, and Brent Venables is known to be a very, very, very good defensive coordinator. So disguise those coverages, make him second guess his decisions when throwing the passes, and shut down the run game. If you can shut down the run game and make a true freshman quarterback beat you in a hostile environment, you will be set up for success.
Absolutely. I think Oklahoma is a really good team. We talked about their schedule multiple times. A lot of really good teams from the SEC lined up for the Sooners, Alex. And this one, the non-conference, isn't a whole lot easier. The Wolverines coming in with some talent. Let's see if Oklahoma finds a way to attack the grounds game more with their running backs in the backfield. Let's talk about another really competitive game last year, a defensive struggle rivalry. Iowa State and Iowa, that's the Auburn and Alabama for those guys. Not a whole lot of love lost. You'll probably see some extracurriculars in this game. You'll probably see a few taunting penalties or something. You can just expect the emotions to be high in this game. But the Cyclones are favored of Iowa State, and I think they probably should be, but I really think Iowa is starting to try to take that step in the right direction. I know last year was a really, really brutal year for the Hawkeyes. I just believe that this team is better than they've shown. I think they'll give Iowa State a good run for their money, but I do think Iowa State has the advantage, and I think they should win. I expect it to be another defensive struggle, not a whole lot of offense on paper really for either team, but I think Iowa State finds a way to get the job done.
My question for Iowa, is the offense there? A couple years ago, you had your punter win the punter of the year because he set a record for the most punting yards because your offense was so bad. And last year wasn't any different. Your quarterback was pretty bad. Your running back was really good, who's now third-string running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers and Caleb Johnson. But this year, in your first game, your new quarterback from South Dakota State, who everybody is raving about, Mark Gronowski, he's stellar in FCS. He had over 3,000 yards, 29 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions in 2023, and then 2,700 yards, 23 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions in 2024. But in their week one game, he finished with 44 passing yards. He was 8 of 15, and that was against Albany.
Oh.
So if you're playing that bad against Albany, what's going to happen when you play a team like Iowa State, who's already battle-tested, beat Kansas State? How are you going to be able to throw against that? You can't lean on your run game every game and pray it works out. You had to have some sort of complementary football. That's what Iowa has struggled with for the longest time. The defense will always be stout. It's been stout at Iowa for the longest time, but you got to help them out. You got to have long, sustained drives. You got to keep them off the field, keep them juiced, keep them energized, because you have a team in Iowa State who is going to lean on their veteran quarterback and Rocco Beck. And the thing for Iowa State is going to be to test the Iowa defense vertically, make them back up, and then use that vertical stretch of the defense to set up your running game with Carson Hansen and Abu Samah. If you can get those guys going, open up those run lanes, that Iowa's defense can't control that, and the offense can't keep up with it because it's not good enough. And then for the defense for Iowa State, keep Iowa in third and long. If they're not going to be able to throw the football, if you're in third and long, you can't run the football in third and long every time. You're just going to get eaten up at the line of scrimmage. That's going to be the key for Iowa and Iowa State. I do think Iowa State ends up pulling it out due to the offense being a lot better in the small sample size we've seen in 2025.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Iowa State more than likely gets the job done. I'd say they're favored, I think, by 7 or 8 right now. But I would expect that game to have the potential to end up being 14 or 15. How about this one? Kentucky and Ole Miss. Ole Miss looks pretty good, 63-7 over Georgia State. but again, it's Georgia State. Keep that in mind when you hear these numbers, 400 yards passing and 295 on the ground. It's basically me with Madden and the sliders up.
Rookie.
Yeah, exactly. But Kiffin's offense was balanced, regardless if it was against a great opponent. It was balance in the dispersity of the run and pass. The Kentucky offense was neither of those things. It begs a question, how will this be a game? But honestly, this is a similar matchup as it was last season, in my opinion. Ole Miss loves going tempo. They like to go fast. They like to score points. Mark Stoops and Kentucky want to control the game with good running attack and good defense. I think for the Wildcats, Big Blue Nation, it's just a concern of how will the points come. You talk about another team in a similar situation. Granted, Toledo's a little better, but playing Toledo last week, not a whole lot to be bragged about with offense whatsoever. But Austin Simmons had a really good week coming out of the game, his first start. I think if Kentucky makes enough noise with them being at home, I do think Kentucky can hang in there till the third, maybe start of the fourth quarter, but I just don't see there being any way that Ole Miss can have that bad of a game on offense.
I don't know if anybody's forgotten, but this is the game last year that kept Ole Miss out of the college football playoff.
Yes.
Kentucky upset them, and when people were looking at, okay, are we going to put in at SMU, we're going to put in Bama, we're going to put in South Carolina, we're going to put in Ole Miss. Had Ole Miss not lost this game, which everybody criticized as the worst loss of any of the programs that were vying for that last playoff spot, they would have been the team that made the college football playoff last year, and there's no telling what they could have done with the offense that Lane Kiffin runs. So they're going to be hungry. I'm sure it's on the bulletin board in their locker room that shows the scoreboard last year of this team kept you guys out of the playoff last year. If you want to make the college football playoff, handle this game. This team is not going to come in here and just lay down and die on the field for you to go in and beat them 63-7. They're going to come out there. They're going to be hungry because they, just like you, have something to prove. Zach Calzada has been around the world and back in the college football world. A&M, Auburn, Incarnate Word, Kentucky. But he didn't look good at all last week. Awful. He was 10 of 23, 85 yards and an interception against Toledo. And you talked about Toledo. They're not a slouch, but they're not anything in the SEC. And if you're struggling like that, you got to be a lot better against an Ole Miss team. And Mark Stoops talked about it in his press conference. It's simplifying the game for Calzada with some easier reads against a defense like Ole Miss. You got to get the run game going. Can't turn the ball over against Ole Miss because you're only going to get a limited amount of chances to get into that red zone against the Ole Miss defense. And then Ole Miss, you have an outstanding linebacker core of T.J. Dottery, Jaden Yates, and some Terry Perkins. Take away the run game from Calzada. If he doesn't have that to lean on, I don't believe he has the arm and the receiving and the receivers in that room to keep up with the offense you run at Ole Miss.
Yeah, I think Kentucky just doesn't have enough on offense for this game. I think they'll get the job done. The Rebels will this year to avenge last year's loss. How about this one? Trap game for the Gators as Florida will travel to USF to take on the Bulls. This is in Florida, right?
Yeah, it's in the swamp.
Yeah, this is in Florida. I don't know why I put Florida at South Florida. Okay, so this game is in Gainesville, and that's a huge factor for both teams. Florida really plays good in the swamp. USF's offense, however, Byron Brown, as we talked about earlier a little bit in the show, he can absolutely play, and they've got a few weapons for him to, you know, get the ball to. I think USF hangs in for 3.5-4 quarters. I don't think this is a game that Florida will control. I think if they get out to a good start defensively and make USF punt, or, you know, settle for three several times, I think Florida can capitalize off those things. I do like the Gators to win late, but I just think USF's going to be looking in, ready for a fight. I mean, these guys are receiving some ranking votes for a reason. They can play football. They've got a good recruiting class. They went out and got a few transfers in their pocket. They're coached well, and they're no stranger to SEC ball. You talked about earlier, you know, the near upset of the Tide. So I think this is a game that USF can stay in. But, however, I think DJ Lagway and the weapons that Florida has added. How about that catch last week? for that was maybe the most exciting Florida Gator catch is maybe the game winner against Georgia.
Remember yeah, that maybe,
one?
Maybe.
Yeah, that was a good one. I think Florida finds a way to get the job done.
They better, because this is one of those games where you have to win, because you look at the rest of their SEC schedule.
Not pretty.
Not pretty. And you even have Florida State at the end of the year, and we just saw what Florida State did to Alabama. So this is a must-win game for Billy Napier in Florida. You don't want to go into SEC play 1-1. If you're going to be the Florida defense, you have to realize Byron Brown absolutely just ran over Boise State. I'm sure if you're a football fan, you've seen the viral clips of him running over players, scoring touchdowns. And if you haven't, I recommend going watching them. They're awesome. I wish certain players at Alabama had that same mentality. Let me run over you and through you and not around you or avoid it. But you got to be able to contain Byron Brown. Take away his legs. Keep him in the pocket. Because as I saw last year and the year before as a Bama fan and him playing at USF, he does struggle throwing the football at times. If you provide him pressure and take away his legs, he is not the most accurate passer in the entire world. Don't lose contain on him, like I said, and do your job and stick to your assignment. Don't play hero ball. Don't go out there and run a rush lane that's not your job. Don't overcommit to this side of the football field when your job is this side of the football field. Don't play hero ball. Stay in your lane and do your job. That's what I wish Bama players would realize, is do your job. If you do your job and somebody else fails at their job, then that's their fault. That's not your fault. If you try to overcommit and overcompensate for their ineptitudes, then that becomes your problem, and it's a whole other issue. Just do your job against Byron Brown. Take away his legs. Make him throw the football because he's not the best passer in the world. And if you're USF, Don't let Florida get out to an early lead. Don't let them get out to 14-0, 21-0 in the swamp. If you do that, it's going to be a white flag waving because that crowd's going to get rowdy. They're going to get all into that game. I don't think USF is going to be prepared for that type of environment and play mistake-free football. If you give them a turnover, again, it's just going to be the swamp's going to get rowdy. Can you deal with that crowd noise? I don't think USF can. I think Florida gets out of this game narrowly. I do think USF comes in with a great game plan, and they're able to keep it close in at least three quarters. But I think that fourth quarter, like it happened to them at Alabama last year, gets them, and Florida ends up winning.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that Florida may be the second or third toughest place to play in the SEC. I don't know. There's different opinions on that, but it's definitely held in a high regard. Nobody wants to go there to play a football game. How about this one? Mississippi State and Arizona State. So bottom tier of the SEC facing an Arizona State team, which I think is a poised to have another good year this year. Me and you talked about last year against Texas. They nearly found a way to get the job done without their best player on the outside in Jordan Tyson. And I think Cam Scataboo was the story, but Cam Scataboo was not it. And I think people will start to see that for the Sun Devils this year. I think the Bulldogs coming off a 34-17 victory against Northern Arizona, I just don't know if that's enough for me, to feel like Mississippi State has a chance against a team like Arizona State. They run it well. They do just enough throwing the ball with Jordan Tyson. I think he finds a way to get himself going in a good stage. Hey, dude, you got to think about it. Even though this is on paper, Arizona State should win. This is a game that the conference needs, because you know, there's all this talk about SEC being superior conference, and after the Big Ten, it's not close. Well, I think teams like Arizona State are starting to want to have words for that. I really like their coach, Dillingham. Alex, I think Arizona State wins against Mississippi State by two touchdowns or more. I just don't think the Bulldogs have enough.
I'd agree with that. I think Arizona State ends up winning this game, but Mississippi State, I'll give it to them. They looked a million times better in week one against Southern Miss than they did all of last year. I know they are last in college football in penalty yards. They had 119 last week. But still, I think they look much improved offensively and defensively, because Southern Miss, we talked about it last week, KJ, wasn't a slouch. They brought in Marshall coach Charles Huff, and while he was great at Marshall last year and gave some teams some scares and even won some games he shouldn't have, Southern Miss was nothing to go into the game and be like, okay, this is an easy 40-point win.
No.
Mississippi State, I think, handled their business in that game. I just don't see them having the firepower to keep up with Arizona State. Sam Levitt, outstanding last week again against a Northern Arizona team that had no business being in that football game. Jordan Tyson, 12 receptions, 141 yards, and two touchdowns.
That's pretty good.
And Arizona State actually themselves struggled with penalty yards, had 12 penalties for 93 yards, and that's 130th in college football, so almost dead last. That's something you got to get cleaned up. Kenny Dillingham talked about that, cleaning that up, going into an environment like the Cowbell City of the world in Mississippi State. But I don't think Mississippi State is grown enough as a program under Jeff Lebby yet. I think they keep the game competitive, but Arizona State, kind of like what Florida, I think, is going to do to USF, is going to use that late third, early fourth quarter to say, okay, it's pretty close. Let's open this thing up and run out of the gym or run out of the field with them.
Yeah, I think that's the key for that Arizona State team. I think Arizona State is poised to have another really good year, as I said earlier. Here's another team that gave some people some scares last year in Kansas. They will play Missouri. I think this is another sneakily pretty good week two contest, Alex. I like Missouri's by committee backfield, kind of reminiscent to Auburn's. Several guys that are maybe a two, nobody that's really a clear-cut one type situation. And sometimes that plays very well because you play off of each other's skill sets. And I like Missouri's offensive line in this game versus the Kansas Jayhawks defensive line. However, the linebacking core for the Jayhawks is very good. One of the best at not missing tackles anywhere in football, actually. I think this team has a very good pass rush led by players like Dean Miller. DJ Withers has the potential to create significant pressure on the quarterback, but they do maintain a lot of good defensive rotation pieces. I think Kansas has enough on offense to get them into the end zone 2 to 3 times, and I think they win by a touchdown or more.
I'm going to go with Missouri in this game. Last year, I'll be the first to admit I had Jalen Daniels in the Heisman conversation, and then he decided he was going to lay an egg. All of last year, he had 12 interceptions. Abysmal. I think that would get, that's what gets him in this game in a hostile environment in Missouri. It's, he's going to make those mistakes. I understand he has 7 touchdowns and 1 interception in 2 games played against Fresno State and Wagner. But that's nowhere near Missouri's level of talent. The defense in Missouri played great last week against Central Arkansas. Josiah Trotter, who came in from West Virginia, he's also a brother of Jeremiah Trotter Jr. and son of Jeremiah Trotter. If you're an NFL fan, you know who I'm talking about. I just think Missouri, Bo Prabula looked awesome last week. Sam Horn's done for the year probably. So he wins that quarterback battle by default, unfortunately for Sam Horn. You talked about the running game of Ahmad Hardy and Jamal Roberts. I just love what Eli Drinkwitz has done with that program. They gave him the time he needed to build it back up. There was a lot of fans a couple years ago before he turned it around saying it's time to make that change, but he answered the bell and got that team back on track. I just don't think Kansas has enough, and Jalen Daniels is going to make mistakes that Bo Prabula won't, and the home crowd is going to make Kansas pay.
Yeah, we'll see how that one plays out for Missouri. How about this one? Virginia Tech and Vandy, you know, the teams that the V teams, Vandy coming off of a good win. Virginia Tech playing South Carolina, I thought they would upset them. And for 3 quarters, Alex, they didn't buck down. They really lined up and played pretty good defense. Just what we said about their offense, maybe not quite having enough, that rang true as well. And I think that is a disadvantage for them coming into a game versus Vanderbilt. You can pretty much chalk up Diego Pavia and the tight end connection that he has. You can pretty much talk that up for a 300-yard duo most games in Eli Stowers. I just really like those two on the same team. And I know that SEC defenses are absolutely tired of it. And they shredded Auburn and just really played inspiring football. You talk about Eli Drinkwitz, who I think has done a pretty good job given the circumstances. How about what Clark Lee has quietly done for Vanderbilt? And they're getting some pretty good looks in recruiting. I think this is a much improved Vanderbilt team. They do have a tough schedule as well this year. But I like Vanderbilt in this game. I think they win by 7 or 10.
Last year, this is the game that I would say kind of put Vanderbilt on the map. I know the Bama game really ended up putting him on the map with that big win. But this is the game that I think people kind of noticed. Okay, Vanderbilt, this isn't the same Vanderbilt anymore. The final score of that game last year was 34-27. Vanderbilt won in overtime. I know they almost blew a 17-point lead. But that blowing a 17-point lead for Vanderbilt a couple years ago before Clark Lee got there is one of those times where they just lay down on the field and it was over. They blew the lead. It's Vanderbilt. It's going to happen. They blow big leads, stuff like that. But this is the different Vanderbilt team. They dominate time of possession, and if they're going to beat Virginia Tech this year, keep your foot on the gas. If you go up to that 17-point lead, don't go, okay, we got a 17-point lead. Let's just lighten up here. Let's just burn some clock. If we're third and seven, let's just run the ball, la, 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 la. No, keep your foot on the gas and go. Beat them by 40 if you have to. Not saying that will happen, but just keep your foot on the gas. Use your weapons like Eli Stowers and Junior Sherrill at the receiver positions. In Virginia Tech, the defense you talked about at KJ against South Carolina played well enough for them to win that football game. It was just the offense was abysmal. Kyron Drones looked awful. He was maybe the worst Power 4 quarterback I saw last weekend outside of maybe Zach Calzada. His feet weren't there. He was happy feet in the pocket, leaving the pocket too soon, throwing off platform almost every throw, and he's got to be better if they're going to win a football game. They don't have the running back they had last year is now playing for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He doesn't have that to lean on. The weapons at the receiver position aren't wonderful like they are at other programs, even in the ACC. He's got to put the team on his back offensively and get them in the red zone and get them in the end zone when they're in the red zone. Because they got in field goal range and they got deeper into South Carolina territory, They just couldn't convert. I think Vandy wins this game. They're hungry. They're once again coming out, showing that this is last year wasn't a fluke, and they're going to dominate Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I think Virginia Tech doesn't have a chance against Vanderbilt this weekend. It could be a close game like we saw two or three quarters, but again, I think Vanderbilt has the edge.